Hello, and welcome to the Investment Symposium by BNP Paribas Asset Management. My name is Daniel Morris, Chief Market Strategist, and in this report, we'll be talking about inflation and central bank policy, COVID and fiscal issues in the age of transformation. We will hear from one of our guests at this symposium, Professor Olivier Blanchard. Professor Blanchard is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. From 2008 until 2015, he led the research department at the International Monetary Fund. Leading central bankers appear split on whether to take action in the face of rising inflation. Although in the U.S., the Federal Reserve now appears to have pivoted towards taking action sooner rather than later. Professor Blanchard told the forum,
"It was obvious from the start that the size of the stimulus package, both the December 1 and then the February 1, plus excess saving by people, meant that the amount of demand which was going to come online was gigantic relative to any estimate of the output gap of the space to increase demand. So it's really very much an own goal, and the question is, what do we do now? So where are we? So inflation at that point is still reflecting mostly supply constraints. People talk about supply shocks, but that's not supply shocks too. And there's something about supply shocks. Sometimes, you know, COVID happens in some Chinese harbor and then slows down traffic. That's a shock. But in general, if you look, for example, at trade, as you probably know, volume of trade is actually higher than before the COVID crisis. And when you're operating, you know, at very, very high levels, then things go wrong. And what we've discovered is that they can go wrong fairly quickly. There's a so-called Leontief aspect to these things. If, you know, if something goes wrong, then many things go wrong. There's also something interesting, which I call the paper towel effect. And that I discovered when I was talking to producers of chips. As you know, one of the major uncertainties is when will the chip shortage end? So here there's a trend, and they knew about it. But when you ask them, you know, will the shortage be gone by mid-year next year or longer, they said, well, we don't know. It's not so much on the supply side, it's on the demand side. And the reason is that they have a lot of demand from firms which say, well, there's going to be a shortage, let me order three times as much as I need. Now, when this happens, you know, this is what happened to paper towel at the beginning of a COVID crisis. Nobody could find paper towel because everybody was buying it because there was not going to be any. And so this creates enormous uncertainty about when the ship shortage will end. It may be that once people have three times what they need, they really don't ask as much and it goes away, or it could be, but they have a very hard time. So one of the major uncertainties, which is this chip issue, is really a very complex one, and it could last or it could end more quickly. So again, that comes mostly from supply constraints, the inflation. And so you see it in the prices of commodities which are traded on commodity markets. And you see it for raw materials and so on. That is due to world demand, but world demand is very much affected by U.S. demand at this point. So that's a main source of increases. What is more worrisome is that you're starting to see it in places which are not directly affected by the supply constraints. So there's two pieces of information which I think are very important. The first one is the so-called sticky price index. I don't know how many of you know it, but the Atlanta Fed has separated prices between the prices which are determined in the market and prices which are set, and typically set for fairly long periods of time, you know, a few months or something like this. And that's called the sticky price index. It's done by the Atlanta Fed. And this is starting to go up. It's not at all going up as much as the others, but you can see that it's affecting now a very wide distribution of prices, not just gas and cars and so on. The other thing which is even more worrisome, and that's something that I worried from the start, is the emergence of wage price spiral. And the story here, the scenario that I worried about very much then, this was in February, was that, okay, so you get the increase in prices, and they come to an end and they stabilize, but workers have lost purchasing power. And they are operating in a very tight labor market where they have bargaining power. And they basically asked to reestablish their real wage. And so nominal wages go up, well, which means that costs go up, and nominal wages are a big part of cost, as you well know. And therefore, prices go up, and then the workers say, well, prices are going up. We want an increase in wages again. And it starts, you know, what used to be called wage-price spiral, which we haven't seen in decades, but it can happen. And then it's very different type of inflation. If inflation is due to ups and downs in the oil market, it's very volatile. And if you want to kill it, you can kill it relatively easily. The kind of inflation which comes from wages and prices being, you know, one after the other, then that's much harder.
Our audience at the Investment Symposium raised various questions on issues that are front of mind now. COVID is obviously one of them. It has had a profound impact on society and the economy. That leaves many people wondering whether the changes that we have seen, for example, in supply chains, will linger, and they question the impact it will have on trade. Here are Professor Blanchard's comments.
I want to focus on two things. The first one is deglobalization. And I think that's going to be a very, very big issue for many years to come. It's not due mainly to COVID, but COVID has added. I mean, I think it's, you know, the usual perfect storm analogy. The first one is, even before COVID, there were issues about cybersecurity, which is, you know, if you buy a fridge from China, it's going to have chips which are going to listen to what you're doing, and that's terrible, and therefore we have to put, you know, tariffs on Chinese refrigerators. And there's this notion that supply chains, which depend on production in countries very far away, is actually an issue because you can't control your chain very well. And this leads to repatriation. I actually think the argument is a bit strange. I mean, the fact that it's much more about diversifying your chain rather than repatriating it. But I think it's going to be used in that way. I'm going to talk a bit more later about global warming and the fight against global warming. But part of what has to be done is carbon taxation. And with carbon taxation comes the issue of what you do at the border. And that's the issue of carbon border taxes. And that's a total mess. I mean, in the sense that it's incredibly difficult to do right, which means that there's enormous space for doing it wrong and using it basically as a way of establishing tariffs and other things on things that you don't want to have imported. And you can see how in many, many countries, including the US, there's a very strong tendency to try to restrict trade to protect the various categories of workers. And I think all these forces are just going to limit trade and maybe decrease trade. And we have to think about the implications. The second dimension is reallocation. So we know that COVID has led to a lot of short-run reallocation. Basically, you know, we hear about restaurants, we hear about IT. How much reallocation is going to be implied by COVID as a result of, you know, people wanting to change where they work, where they live, and so on? BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics in the US, has done a very good study in which they think that the amount of reallocation due to COVID will be about 15% higher over the next 10 years than it would have been absent COVID. The question is, what do you make with the 15%? If it's 15% over 10 years, that's kind of a usual fluctuation in reallocation from decade to decade. But if it happens within a few years, then that's a very large amount of reallocation. And again, that's going to create problems both in terms of reallocating activities, but reallocating people. The other dimension of reallocation, which I think we're going to have to focus more and more on, is the implications of moving to green technologies. I'm sure that some of you have worked and know a whole lot about electric cars. But, you know, the example which I've been struck by is that in a regular traditional car, you have about 2,000 moving pieces. In an electric car, you have 20, which means that whoever was producing the parts for the cars is probably out of business because it's a completely different business. So think about the amount of manufacturing, which depends indirectly on the car industry and how much it will have to adjust. And so I think these are going to be bigger issues than they have been in the recent past.
Finally, the discussion turned to fiscal issues. This is what Professor Blanchard told the audience.
So on the first, this is what I've been doing research on for the most part, for the past few years. And I've concluded that, no, we're not on the verge of a debt explosion. I think there is fiscal space. I think what's happening is that, as you know, the real rates, real safe rates are extremely low, the rates at which governments can borrow extremely low, so the debt dynamics are very favorable. And the question then, is it going to last? My answer is yes, I think it's going to last. I suspect that there may well be, for some time, a fairly substantial increase in rates, but I see this as a bump on a downward trend. And I would expect that medium run, we will go back to very low rates. So governments can really finance themselves at much lower rates, so there's a lot more fiscal space. And they may need to, and we've seen this in the past few years, which is when the rates get very low, then monetary policy really cannot do much, and then it has to be fiscal. So my sense of this is that things are not catastrophic there. We have a structural change, which is very low rates that are likely to last. That gives more fiscal space, and the fiscal space may have to be used in order to basically prop demand if demand is weak, because central banks really cannot do. Let me end with the European Union rules, budget rules. As you know, they were suspended last year, and they are supposed to, I don't think there's any official date, but they were supposed to come back into play at the end of next year. There is an enormous amount of discussion as to what should be done. Everybody agrees that they are not good, that they have constrained fiscal policy too much, that they are too complicated, and so on and so on. There are all kinds of proposals. Like everybody else, I have one. But the question is, what's going to happen? And here, let me make a forecast, which is kind of a political forecast, which I should not as an economist do. But having talked to the various players, I suspect what's going to happen is that we're going to return to the rules, to the 3% limit on deficit and the 60% target for debt. This is in the Maastricht Treaty. It's very hard to change. And a number of people are convinced that that's not so bad. What may happen is that the rule which says that if you're away from 60%, you have to adjust back to 60% by a factor of 1/20th each year, which really can be incredibly counterproductive if you're in a recession and you have to do fiscal consolidation, especially when you start with levels of debt like Italy, which are much above 100. That, I think, is going to be relaxed. But I think we'll go back to 3%, 60%. This is going to be the gift to the hawks. The gift to the doves is going to be that there is going to be a separate budget for green investment, which is going to take place both partly at the EU level and partly at the national level, where countries are going to be allowed to spend on green investment and maybe a few other things and finance it by debt. This way, green investment will be protected. This will be considered not the standard debt, will not count for the 60% and so on, and will basically give a bit of space. Is it ideal? No. Is it better than what there is? Yes. Am I right that this is what's going to happen? I think you have to invite me in a year, and then we'll see whether I was right or not.
That is it for this edition of our Investment Symposium report. We will be back with more from this thought leadership meeting, including more podcasts and blog posts. Go to our Investors Corner blog, where you will also find an executive summary.
This podcast presentation includes a discussion on current market events and is not intended as investment advice or an offer of products or services by BNP Paribas Asset Management. Please keep in mind that the information and analysis in this presentation is only current as of the publication date.